Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve bring you high-level sports analysis and stories as two dads raising kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate to see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Happy to be here.
Man, you the Kang of the pattern hoodies, I'm noticing. Like, you a G among G's on those. You got the tie-dye joints. You got the camouflage joints.
Yeah, the problem is my wife likes to shop, and she has bought all the things that she wants for herself. So I get lots. I guess it's not a problem. So, yeah, it's not much of a concerted effort for me. Like, I go in my closet, and I grab whatever's on top. And sometimes, surprise, it's a new pattern.
Yeah, you know what, though? You go into the next level hoodie game. Like, I realized this, right? Like, you can't necessarily get you, like, a cute, entertaining graphic across the front of it in the next level of the hoodie game. But I went and stepped up a little bit on the more luxurious hoodie, shall we say. Gotta say, not the worst idea. Yeah, let me tell you, I'm looking at that hoodie right now, and I know this. It ain't cost $45.
Yeah, I don't know how much that costs, and I don't ask. When we can't make the mortgage, I'll get me another job, I guess.
All I'm saying is go like this. Rub on that sleeve. That don't feel like what it did when you was at Maryland in the hoodies. Now do it.
Now, them bowl hoodies was a lot rougher.
But they was the bomb at the top.
Man, them things was effective. You wear that hoodie to the bar, man, you had already made it quite clear. I don't know. It was like a chain, like a big diamond chain. You telegraphing to everybody who you are. It made it work.
I tell people all the time, when I was in high school, I worked at the Fuddruckers by Willowbrook Mall in Houston, right? So it's like right across the parking lot from the mall. And get a little break between shifts or whatever it is, me and a homie would go to the mall, and we would go in our work fit, right? Not the flyest thing in the world, but you know what it looked like? Looked like I had some money. Like, not necessarily that I had a lot of money, but I had money for the 15, 16-year-olds that were my demo at that
exactly.
Point.
I remember, so I worked at a fast food place, like a fast food Chinese place in the mall called Dragon House Express. And it wasn't like the coolest thing, but I wanted my own money. So like, I wasn't proud of my Dragon House Express polo until I realized a system that you are well aware of, the underground mall bartering system.
Yes.
Man, I got that Madden for cheap. If I just had to give you a couple extra scoops of that orange chicken when you came through. Then I go to Electronic Boutique. Got that Madden on the discount. I ain't had to wait in no lines. They were holding for me. Man, that was the best part of the job. They could have kept the money, but I knew I could go down to Aeropostale or wherever and give me a little discount off something.
That's where you learn relationships, man. The mall bartering system. I work here. You work here. Oh, you work at the movie theater. Good to know. You know what I'm saying? Like that I will never forget that because so... Lenox Square in Atlanta, which was like the mall at the time. And honestly, ain't like no new malls are really cracking. It is probably still the mall in Atlanta, but it is also the mall to get shot. It's a real surprising turn of events, I have to say, from 1997 until now. But I went to school in a consortium, right? 4 schools, CAU, Morehouse, Spelman, and Morris Brown, right? Got to be honest with you, the Morehouse and Spelman folks, they didn't have as many jobs at the mall because their parents had it a little better than the average students at these other places. But we knew somebody that worked at every store in the mall. We wasn't working food service. We had high school diplomas, you know what I'm saying? But we had somebody at every spot in the mall, and it was just all a game, figuring out who can get what, how, when, and why.
Oh, yeah, got that Sam Goody hookup. I remember that. I'm saying stuff that a lot of young listeners, I'm sure, are not aware of, but Sam Goody was a place where they used to sell tapes and CDs.
Yes.
I would get all the albums there on the discount. I was about to say I had a job. I did have that job. I think I was 14 when I worked there. I had a job the year before that, and then people started to realize I was good at football, and then that became my job. There was no time for working, and there was time for going to camps and trying to get this scally.
Yeah, I feel bad for kids, man. They got no experience of going to the record store. Like, the record store didn't even have records when we was going, but it was still the record store. Yeah, like, we ain't ever call it the CD store. I'm going to the tape store, right? It was just the record store. And that was just always just a fun experience of going to the record store, even if all you was doing was just looking at what was on the shelf.
So many unconscious things that impact the way that we, like, experience culture. So I guess I was thinking about the record store experience, and I hear people tell the story of going into the record store and having the person there be super knowledgeable and point them in a direction. That wasn't my experience. It was like there would be like a big poster or something of somebody in there. But I feel like most of the time, I knew what I wanted when I was going in there. Like, the record store wasn't a hangout for me. It wasn't like how you would go to a bookstore, like, I want a book, let me peruse. Like, I was going in on a mission. It was Tuesday, and that Silk the Shocker was coming out. I was not proud, but I was going to scoop it and stuff it in the bag next to that Nas, just in case anybody asked what I got. I got the Nas.
So you're in a different boat, I guess, because, like, for me, that was like Tuesday would come around, and back in the day, Tuesday was the day that everything new came out. And so Tuesday come around and you go in, and keep it in mind, we ain't had no chance to preview nothing back then, right? We was really just kind of rolling the dice. Like, I remember when Blockbuster Music opened over by Willowbrook Mall, and they would let you listen to it before you bought it, which was just a whole new thing, right? Like, we was just out here shake them up, roll the dice, right? Yep. And so you'd go in the record store, and yeah, you get put up on a little game or something you wasn't up on, right? Like, yo, you might want to check this out, man. This one kind of hot. You know, you go do it. And now it's so much and so many people saying so many things and so few trusted sources that the game just don't work that way. But if you went to that same record store every Tuesday, it'd be the same cat in there. You figure out if he was going to steer you right, steer you wrong, whatever it was. And you walk in like, yo, what's that playing? You know, did you go check that out or whatever it is? Now we just got everything, and that hasn't actually made things better.
I got stuck on Blockbuster Music. I never knew that existed, and I just want to be the CEO. I want to talk to the CEO at Blockbuster Time. It's like, man, this renting videos thing, it ain't going to last forever. You know what we're going to pivot to? Selling CDs. Like, they just pick the worst two industries for the future of their business.
So they got on the music game, like, I want to say that Blockbuster Music opened in like 95 and 96.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was in high school. Like, it opened then, and it was a great experience. It was a big, giant, pristine record store, and they had a setup in the middle where they had like 5 or 6 CD, like, Discman set up. And so if you wanted to check something out, you could bring the CD up there. Boom, you know, you could roll that. The prices were reasonably good. Like, this is when Blockbuster was still Blockbuster. Like, when it was still cracking. We'll never be able to explain to people what it was. Like, we talk so much about how Blockbuster fumbled the bag, but we don't talk nearly enough about how Blockbuster picked it up. Like, you used to go to the video store, and the video store, God, I feel so old doing this, but you go to the video store, and the video store was just a neighborhood spot.
Mine was called First Run Video. I remember it quite clearly, and I remember the cape at the back that you weren't supposed to go past.
If you go to the regular video store, and you out here trying to get, shall we say, them limited edition videos, bro, you doing this wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you go to the other store, the person that works there is not judging you. You go to the regular store, but you want to go to the back where you got to show ID. Oh, they gonna remember you forever.
That's like the amount of like desire, I guess, or shamelessness. I don't know what it is that it required back then, because now you just Google whatever you want to Google, you can find it. But not only did you have to like have the fortitude to go back to them, like, I don't care what you think about me, you had to then present the video, which often had a name that made it quite clear what you was into. Like, that experience, I wouldn't have made it there. I'm just have to use my memory, because I don't know if I got the heart to do all that.
Hold on. And they got to put it in the database, because if you don't bring it back, they got to account for it.
Imagine getting a letter that
Yeah, like that was the thing about it, man. Yeah, that was the thing about it. Like now, if you know, you getting all stuff like that, that ain't really saying too much about you or whatever it is. But you had to make various levels of effort to get on whatever it was back in the day. And I imagine it wasn't cheap because they could only produce it to a certain level of scale.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that you had to, I mean, now, obviously, the barriers for everything is so much lower to get into anything, to learn about anything, to find anything, which is really good in some ways and really dangerous in other ways. But I bet it was pretty easy, because if someone had the desire to jump through all the hoops and experience all the embarrassment to get a certain particular product, man, if I'm working at the video store, I might just go ahead and send your name over to them people. Like, man, I ain't got nothing to say specifically, but yeah, just go over there, pop in on this address one time, see what's really cracking over there.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I just can't understand why you would not just go to the place that sell pipes. You know what I'm saying? Like I just don't get why, you know, Grateful Dead t-shirts. Like, I just don't know why it is that would not be where you would decide to go, rather than where it's a possibility that you might run into, like a greater possibility that you might run into somebody from your job.
It was the Patapsco Flea Market was the place that you would go in Baltimore to get all this stuff, the illicit things that you weren't supposed to get. You go to Patapsco Flea Market, they was not asking for no IDs, there was not much regulation. It was a store called Dirty Rays that was, it was actually called Dirty Rays. It was the only place in the flea market that you couldn't see into. And one of my homeboys, you know the boy, you know the friend you had that used to sell candy in like elementary school,
always
blow pops for a quarter. Yeah, and he would be the one that would be dubbing the tapes and trying to sell those. Yeah, he made him a little business out of going and copying one tape from Dirty Ray or one CD or one DVD from Dirty Ray and flipping that thing over and over again. I ain't have that type of ingenuity. I ain't want to be associated with that.
Yo, it is so wild how the person that was flipping candy at 5 years old, your path in life has been basically charted from here on out, right? Like this one, like my brother sold candy in high school. That's a little different, right? Like he had it in him, whatever. But the ones that's like on that hustle at 7 years old, they are on that hustle forever and cannot be trusted.
They got millions of dollars or they in jail or both.
Yes. Yes. Basically. You ready for this NFL football action?
Absolutely. Should be fun. Got some good games this weekend. Which one are you looking forward to?
I don't know. It's funny you say there's going to be good games. There's been so few good games over the last month of this season. Like, I don't know. Something about this season has just felt a little off, and it's always better when there's a legitimately dominant team, right? And so the Packers, very good, not dominant. Titans, number one seed, nobody thinks is going to win the AFC, I don't feel like. Like, at no point this year did we ever look at the Titans and say to ourselves, like, yo, they the boys, right? Like, nobody felt that. But the games, one, we got the 49ers and the Cowboys, and I had been pretty certain most of the year that the Cowboys are good, not sure. I had been certain most of the year the 49ers were not sure, and here we go.
So to the first point that you made about a dominant team making it all better, we all pretend that we want parity, but I'm with you, man. Like, you think about college basketball, I care when Duke is dominant. I'll, like, tune in and worry about the same thing when the Heat was doing their thing or Golden State, and the same thing in football. The seasons I remember is when Patrick Mahomes and them boys was running this league, or when the 49ers, when I was young, and the Cowboys. Like, that's something that we do like. And as for this game in particular, it feels like a flashback because my whole childhood was NFC Championship games. Whoever won that, 49ers, Cowboys, was going to win the Super Bowl. Bills be damned. Y'all just wait to get smacked. And the interesting thing about this game is everyone's saying how it's a bad matchup for the Cowboys. 49ers is a bad matchup for everybody because they've zigged while everyone else is going kind of small, athletic, spread them out. They're a really aggressive, physical team. 49ers are particularly constructed to get a quick lead. I think Greeny made this analogy that they're like the Colts in that their defense is built to stop the pass, to rush the passer and create big turnovers when the opponent is desperate because they're coming back. So they've gone all in. If you remember a couple years ago, all the foolishness for an entire year around whether they pay Dak or not and whether they really believe in him or not. They believe in him so much that they have built this entire team around his ability to lead this offense and get off to a good start. And I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, Dak, it's been interesting because the Cowboys are your classic beat up on bums team as of right now. And then when they play against good teams, not so much. It's so wild to me. I just can't. Still optimistic about Matthew Stafford. You still got people out here like, I don't know about this Dak thing, right? Like this thing still exists. We're still out here with people on this kick. But Amari Cooper had been up and down, I felt like, all year, you know, when he didn't have COVID. They lost Michael Gallup, right? Like, he tore his ACL, and that matters. That's a big one. Zeke can't quite run it like he was. Like, he's officially hitting that, whoo, I've taken a lot of carries in my life portion of the program. I just want to see if the boy Michael Parsons come out here and have one of them Lawrence Taylor-type games.
That's what it comes down to. So I talked about this a bunch. Is Michael Parsons, I would not anticipate him having a great game because all the ingredients are set up for him to be exploited. And so, like, he's a great pass rusher. Kyle Shanahan is not going to do very many drop-back passes. They're not going to get in a lot of situations where that front four that the Cowboys have that has three pretty much Pro Bowl level pass rushers on it, they are not going to, unless he's a fool, he's not just going on third down, do 5-7 three-step drops, maybe do some three steps, but 5-7 step drops unless they're down by 14 with Jimmy Garoppolo back there. That just ain't going to work. So the reason why I feel like Michael Parsons is in a tough spot is because he's crazy athletic and he's a rookie and he's trying to make a statement, and this is his first playoff game. That man is going to be shot out of a cannon at the linebacker position. There is nothing Kyle Shanahan and that offense like to do more than to punish over-aggressive linebackers who aren't patient enough to get good reads. So, like, that is why, again, as much as, like, we default to, like, quarterback as the thing we talk about, and sometimes I think it's not smart, and this, it does kind of feel like Michael Parsons' game is dependent on whether the Cowboys can score enough points early enough to make San Francisco one-dimensional. Because it's hard to expect a rookie to come out there and be patient enough to read and react properly. Like, I remember my first playoff game. I was trying to do everything at once, and nobody knew my name, and nobody was watching me in particular. But Micah, they're going to be all over him and Kyle Shanahan every week. Exploits a linebacker, and that might be the one.
Well, that was the criticism of him, if there was one, coming out of Penn State, is he got a lot of see ball, get ball, right? And one thing, by the way, that ain't something that typically gets fixed. See ball, get ball is a lifestyle, right? Like, it is just what it is. Like some people just can't, like me playing basketball. I can play basketball, but I can't think about it. Like, if I got to think about it, it's all done. Right? Some people can't think about what they're doing and do it at the same time. Just how it goes.
I saw, so we did last Wednesday, I think, on Get Up, we did your favorite plays of the season. So me being the contrarian that I am, I picked a play where Micah Parsons was playing man coverage outside and switched. So he was outside on the running back. Gallup was in the slot. There's a corner covering Gallup in man coverage. Micah was covering the running back. They crossed, and Micah switched on to Gallup and covered him and broke up the pass in the end zone. That's not see ball, get ball. And that's just one play. That, to me, would give me some hope that Micah Parsons is developing and understanding. Because outside on the edge, at corner, essentially, is what he was playing. It's not a place where linebackers are comfortable. And then you run a switch route, and he's able to switch on it. So, like, that gives me some hope. But I think more than likely, you're probably right. They're going to counter the hell out of him. They're going to end around Debo on him. They're going to boot play action with Kittle in behind him. They're just going to be going after that. And Dan Quinn should be ready for it, and hopefully he can do something about it. But I don't know.
What about your little local homie, Trayvon?
Oh, yeah. Trayvon, man, that boy.
Like, either he going to be player of the game or we going to be talking about him on Monday.
It's funny that Trayvon is one of these players that falls into a weird spot where, like, football purists kind of hate him because they feel like he's boom or bust. But the numbers suggest that what he is doing is worth it. Like, the amount of value that he adds by intercepting the ball, like, an interception is so much more valuable. and so much more rare than a big play that it's like, man. And his ability to catch, I know it sounds dumb, and the joke about DBs not being able to catch is somewhat unfair, but kind of true, in that we aren't expecting the ball. So, like, if I was to run out, I'm going to catch it just as much as a receiver could catch it. But most of the time, I'm covering, and then I make a good break. Oh, ball's there. Try to catch it. Sometimes I drop it. He don't do that. Like, he is fully expecting the ball at all times. And that's, to your point about see ball, get ball, that's something that you are, like, you kind of have, you know, is that ability to always be alert. And so it's valuable. But you're right. The thing about this game that I think means he won't be much of an impact is that's not where Kyle Shanahan likes to attack. And that's not where Jimmy Garoppolo has had his most success, is out on the edges. They don't, like, tend to try to find these one-on-one matchups. Like, Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, as good as they are, they work in the middle of the field with George Kittle most of the time, because that gives you the best. There is no run-pass conflict for corners. Every play, I'm treated like a pass until that dude is 10 yards down the field. And that's what Kyle Shanahan lives on, is that run-pass conflict. And it's huge. Linebackers, that conflict is huge. So they are, I feel like they might try him once just because of his reputation. I guarantee you they got a slant and go or a hitch and go in the playbook that they're going to come to him with. Or they probably run what Mike Shanahan used to run all the time, is they would boot, like play action left, boot to the right, run a comeback with the outside receiver a couple times. And then play action. Everything looks the same. Then he'll do a stutter and go to the post. I could see that happening. If they run that on Trayvon, strike up the band. That is 6 points.
Let me tell you an underrated thing to me about this Cowboys season. I'm actually a little surprised more hadn't been talked about it in, like, dulcet tones and everything else. How long did Jerry Jones wait on Randy Gregory? Was it 3-4 years?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about it.
Like 3-4 years for a dude. He was like, I mean, the talent was there, obviously, but he was like a second or third round pick or something like that, right? Like, this is a dude that you could easily bail on. And unlike Josh Gordon, he's not a dude who had that 1 year where you all saw it come together, right? Like, Gordon had that second year, and I don't even know if he knew what the plays were, right? Like, he said something that gave you a wow, you didn't even know what you were doing, quote. I can't remember what it was. But Randy Gregory, he's back. And so you got him, you got DeMarcus Lawrence, you got Michael Parsons. I really don't know how these dudes ever lose a game.
I mean, they didn't for a stretch there when the offense was playing poorly. Like, that defense was incredible. And there are a couple things that I feel like as football evolves, things that are important change. But it seems quite clear that we're in an era where you win Super Bowls with great quarterback play or getting pressure with four. You know, like, those are the themes. They got both. And that's what, like, there are, that roster is not deep. There are plenty of issues with the coaching staff, but that's what gives me confidence. And you can look at their in-season record against the NFC East versus everyone else and say they just beat up on the bums and the least. All that can be true. But when we get to the playoffs, the game changes a little bit. They got an offensive line when Tyron Smith is healthy that can push people around. Two decent or average to above average running backs. Awesome receivers. But more importantly, they got a quarterback you can trust in late game situations, and a quarterback who's done it in late game situations in the playoffs. And then they can get after you with four, which gives them so much defensive flexibility when all you need is four to get some pressure.
Man, I just need them to get it done, because as we talk about all the time, Cowboys good for business, man. Like, if the Cowboys mess around and go deep in this, like, I feel like this is what America need, man. We need a little something to just kind of put a little pep in the step. You know what I mean? Like, this is it. This is Lucchini falling from the sky. Let's get rich, all of us.
Yes, the oil man, Jerry Jones, is about to make oil for all of us. If he can just get these guys to a championship game, if you get him to a Super Bowl, man, it don't matter what happened.
Another Cowboys Super Bowl in L.A.?
Gosh, man, COVID going to go nuts.
That's what I was about to say.
It's going all that Texas coming to L.A. for the Super Bowl? Ooh, man.
But that ain't just Texas, man. That's everybody from everywhere. But I had the same thought as you. COVID going to get to the Super Bowl. The Cowboys get there. Mortimer. We're back. Omicron, because, yeah. You know, like, here in New York, I was reading something starting to, like, flatten off a little bit and go down. Like, you seeing this in the leagues, too. There wasn't nobody else left to get it. Like, everybody had it. Okay, they ran through a couple weeks, and that seems to be what it is, because we're not having a discussion right now about the playoffs and what concerns need be had about testing and everything else. Like, they really just seem to be operating on the premise that whoever's going to get it probably got it. You know, we kept them away, and now I guess we're going to wind up being good. So, like, hopefully this all runs through smooth, although I do feel like for the Super Bowl, like, did you play Tecmo Super Bowl on the Nintendo?
Yep.
Okay, so Tecmo Super Bowl on the Nintendo was the first one to integrate injuries into it. But they didn't really tell you much about the injury. They just told you somebody was injured. And every week, the next game would come, and when the guy would come back from injury, he would run out of the hospital at the start of the game, right? Like that's what it would be. And you would just start that game and hope that he ran out of the hospital. And the playoffs came, you start that game, nobody ran out of the hospital, reset. Start that game, nobody ran out of the hospital, reset. Before the Super Bowl, they was always running out of the hospital. You never had to worry about that. You wasn't going to be down a man in the Super Bowl. He was going to run out of the hospital. They all going to be running out of the hospital for the Super Bowl. Okay? Can you imagine the lockdown they going to have them dudes on to make sure that don't nobody catch it? Or, you know, just stop testing people?
Yeah, or I was about to say, or that they don't catch who catch it. They don't want that either. But we talked about Omega before. That's where Omega going to be born. If Omega is born, Omega going to be born in L.A. in February. But I think you're right. They're going to do whatever they can to keep this as... Except we talked about this before. There's a couple guys that if they lose, it changes the tenor of the playoffs and the season. But by and large, nobody's going to watch less if somebody's out, you know?
What matchup, by the way, for the Super Bowl does the NFL not want? Like, looking at who's left in this, Arizona and Tennessee?
Oh, my gosh, yeah, Tennessee is... They deserve a trophy for what they've accomplished this year. But go ahead and get on up out of here. Don't mess up our money or our fun from this point forward.
Yeah, like the only two teams I feel like that are in the playoffs, or three, I would argue, that people like don't really care about are the Cardinals, the Bengals, who are interesting, but I don't think people care about. You know what I mean? And the Titans. That's it. Otherwise, the Raiders, the We Shall Overcome team of the year. I don't know how they did all that overcoming. But the Raiders, if the Raiders get deep in this, I keep telling people this. There's a whole generation that does not understand Raiders fans just lying in wait. It's a bunch of them, and they're all over the place. And if they win a Super Bowl, whole lot of shit going to get burned down.
Yeah, the Raiders represented something to society that you wanted to be around, that particularly young people and minorities, frankly, anybody who kind of felt like or wanted to feel like they were an outcast, like that was the Raiders. You wanted to be associated with that. And then NWA popularized all that stuff. So, yeah, the Raiders got a contingent. And then on top of it, they've been in a bunch of different cities and somehow all those cities still love them.
Well, the Raiders are like all the, for lack of a better term, black college basketball teams of the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
But it was the 70s, and they weren't all black. Like, even they white dudes was like the black dudes. Like, Ken Stabler, that's a black quarterback, man. Like, when you start thinking about all the things that people think about with black quarterbacks, Ken Stabler, nah, that fits. Fred Biletnikoff, I'm going to be honest, I don't really know too much about him actually as a person or his personality, but he's a Hall of Fame wide receiver. I don't know how much blacker he gets than that. Just saying.
Oh, my gosh.
You know? Right? That's what I was just saying. Like the Raiders were giving you all of that. It was proxy blackness. Yeah. And the black dudes they had some hellions out there.
In what Al Davis represented, man had on a tracksuit and he was going after the boss at all turns. He was suing the league. He didn't care. He was going. And I think I've talked to you about this before. Maybe you're the one who got me to research it at first, just like how he became the owner of the team. The slippery move ever. And we just celebrate him.
Doc, I don't even feel like that move was slippery. And for those of you who don't understand this, when we were growing up, they would always put it on the screen, Al Davis, managing general partner of the Raiders. They would never call him the owner. And I was like, that's, you know, I never saw that term from anybody else. And obviously I'm 11 years old. I don't understand how partnerships work, right? He was the managing general partner because he did not actually get a majority ownership of the Raiders until the 21st century. Like, I want to say 2005 is when he finally got majority ownership. But in 1972, the dude who was the managing general partner of the Raiders, because keep in mind, Al Davis isn't a rich person. He's a football coach, right?
But and a former commissioner.
Yes. But he had gotten himself on the board. But he went to the 1972 Olympics, came back and found out that Al Davis had held a meeting with the other partner. And two people in the meeting was quorum, and they had decided that Al Davis was the new managing general partner.
That's outrageous, man. Yeah, you're right. Calling that slippery is, like, not fair. Slippery is like you just found something around the edges. Like, that was out and out, like, deception. But, hey.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it was deception. He just gangsted that dude.
Yeah.
He gaffled him for his team.
It is some Suge Knight-ish behavior. I don't know who to compare it to, but it is, yeah. And did it in a tracksuit and sunglasses. Al Davis, like, when in my 20s and 30s, like, Al Davis is kind of had become a bit of a joke. But Al Davis was not to be played with. He looked funny at that age, but Al Davis was not to be trifled with. He was probably, I mean, he was Jerry Jones before Jerry Jones, but ruthlesser, like, because in the fact that Jerry Jones understands football, knows, like, he's a football guy too. Al Davis was that. And also, Jerry Jones famously sued the NFL on a few occasions. Al Davis was doing that pre-Jerry Jones. Like, Al Davis, one of the more interesting characters. And then the team is like, what he decided about that team, how they were going to structure that team, and like how they were going to market that team. Like, he was all in on the rebel stuff. He was as in on the black and Latina and Latino and women. Like, he was progressive from that standpoint, and successful while doing it.
Well, first of all, he's number one, the most interesting figure to me in the history of the NFL. Like, there's nobody close. And the thing you talk about with the marketing and like the running of the business, Al Davis is a legitimate visionary. And think about this for a second. The Raiders, they've worn the same uniforms my whole life. I don't know when exactly they went to this particular design and pattern and they did it, but I have not detected a single change to anything, and they still cold. Like, they're still, like, super cool, and it's basically Al Davis who designed those. He decided, because at first they went, I forget, their colors were not black, silver and black at first. I think they may have been black and gold because it was tied to Army, like West Point football. There's a clear image, everything. They just ain't had no football. That's it. That the problem was they just not had good football. If they ever get the good football back, boy, get ready.
Yeah, I mean, and Gene Upshaw was there, like, and the impact that he had on the league from leading the union, like, that team. There have been documentaries made about some of this stuff, but, like, the whole story is incredibly, incredibly interesting. And the idea that Al Davis was, like, this progressive business visionary and sports visionary to the point where they were still drafting on Al Davis philosophies well into me being in the league, where it was essentially who got the best 40, who the biggest, give them to me. they would run plays. Like, I remember quite clearly that they were, when I was in Denver and we would be watching the game, they played the way that Florida State played when I was in college. It was like, we got better players than you. We're not doing nothing new or interesting. We're going to run man coverage every time on defense, maybe throw in one cover two on offense. We get in an eye formation, and we're doing this and this and this, and it's going to work. And it worked way back in the day. It wasn't working no more. But Al, my homie Fabian Washington, I worked out before the draft, and we, like, joked. I was like, yeah, you going to the Raiders? Because he was fast as hell. He ran a 4.2, Raiders.
That's what I was about to say. I remember when he was in that draft. I was like, oh, we know where he's going. There's no question about it. Like, let me tell you this. If Al Davis was alive, there is no way in the world that DK Metcalf is a Seattle Seahawk.
Yeah, Al Davis loved the way people look and loved the numbers they put up.
That's why it's kind of wild. I guess he took a different version of it, but, like, it's wild that he didn't draft Calvin Johnson. But he did take Jamarcus Russell, who is a classic quarterback of Al Davis's dreams.
It's big with a cannon.
Lane Kiffin wanted to take Calvin Johnson.
Oh.
Yeah, because Lane Kiffin was just not in on Jamarcus Russell, and I don't know where to begin there. I mean, he turned out to be right, but, you know, he ain't know that boy. He ain't know that boy sipping lean. You know what I'm saying? Like, that wound up being the issue.
Calvin Johnson, I was a senior at Maryland. He's a freshman at Georgia Tech, and they had Reggie Ball playing quarterback, which, for those who don't remember, he looked like a fullback, Reggie Ball, and he threw.
Yes, he did.
So we're getting ready for this game, and everybody like, this freshman Calvin Johnson, he's really good. I'm the best corner on the team at the time, and I'm like, all right, yeah, whatever. All right, I mean, but Reggie Ball's playing quarterback, and this guy's a freshman. We'll be all right. I'm sure you can imagine that I learned quite quickly that he was not no regular freshman, and it didn't matter where Reggie threw that thing. Reggie threw that thing in the general. It almost helped that Reggie would throw them things high, because I remember running a dig with him and like, I could stay with him. I'm a good athlete. But then the ball got there and it's like, what am I gonna do? He got a tight end body.
Well, here's one for you. Do you know who once shut Calvin Johnson down in a bowl game?
I don't believe it. Whoever you about to say, I'm gonna say that it's a lie. Who was it?
2 catches, 19 yards. Eric Weddle.
Segway.
Eric Weddle, as a junior at Utah, shut down sophomore Calvin Johnson in a bowl game, and they still made Weddle play safety in the
racism,
league.
Racism, man.
White man ain't got no chance, man. No chance.
Oh, man.
Like, how crazy is that?
Outrageous. That is outrageous. He ain't had no shot.
Yo, what else? What's also outrageous is not playing football for 2 or 3 years and being like, yeah, I'll come in and pick up a shift, which is what Eric Weddle is doing for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they don't put that man out there. Like, I hope they don't put that man out there. I mean, no disrespect to him, but, like, you stopped playing for a reason, like, to be fair, and you haven't been playing in a while, and everyone knows there's a different type of shape. Like, you can be a sprinter and be in sprinter shape, but you go try to run a marathon and see what happens. So, like, I don't know what Eric is doing, but my guess is he's not in football shape. And I don't know the science behind it, but the hits hurt less once you get accustomed to doing it. That first day of training camp, first day of pads in training camp, that's a monster. He about to have that on a playoff Sunday? Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. And then be trying to run with people and change directions? Man, I hope they can reinforce his ligaments. Like, because that's going to be tough. Like, he didn't retire because he felt like it. Like, he didn't do a Calvin Johnson. The people stopped calling. Like, you know? Rooting for him.
Like, whose idea was it to call him this week, though? Like, I'm kind of curious about that. Like, who was like, yo, I think Eric might show up?
I don't know. I mean, somebody went down. My assumption is that they wanted somebody who knew the system, which, like, someone who they didn't have to teach or coach up or train at all, someone that they could trust, a coach on the field, shall we say?
Yeah, but when did he play for Raheem?
That's fair. He played for the Rams. But I assume that they had so much success with the Brandon Staley stuff that they probably tried to keep a lot of that intact. My guess is they brought in Raheem, and Raheem learned the new terminology as opposed to Raheem coming in and installing something new because they were good.
I don't know what to make of the Cardinals at this point. I don't know what to make of Kyler. I don't know what to make of Cliff. They got a fairly good defense, right? Like, there's things there to be done. But on the other side, I sure don't know what you're supposed to make of Matt Stafford at this point and whatever else you're going to get out of that offense. I have no idea. Like, this one right here, anybody can get it. I got no
It's the most important 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks of Matt Stafford's life, of his career, I guess. It's unfair to say of his life, but of his career. Because as we all know, Matt Stafford is good enough to go on a 4 week run of being impressive. Like, he did it during this season with the talent around him. If he does that, then he's going to be remembered as the guy whose most of his career was wasted in Detroit, but finally got in a good situation and made it happen. Whether that's true or not, doesn't matter. That's how it's going to happen. He is under a tremendous amount of pressure to the degree that he cares about his legacy and all that other stuff. Because if he could pull off a couple Super Bowls, he's in the Hall of Fame going forward, which is kind of crazy to think if you think about the career that he's had. But if he pulls up and does this stuff that he's been doing recently, then we're going to be like, man, they should have never traded all they traded to get rid of Jared Goff. They had the same situation before. Like, it was less exciting, but it was the same result.
Do you know how many times Matthew Stafford has made the Pro Bowl?
Whew, I don't. Four.
Once. Once. Everybody keeps, and you know how many people back out of the Pro Bowl, I don't want to go. You know what I'm saying? One Pro Bowl total. They keep trying to sell me on this.
That's not great. I mean, the Pro Bowl, I would say the Pro Bowl is not always the best indicator of how great someone is. But for a quarterback who was taken
once?
No, I'm saying the other way around. For him, for a quarterback that was taken once, yeah. Number one overall, yeah, once seems like it's not enough.
Kirk Cousins made it twice. That's all I'm saying. Like and it ain't like Kirk Cousins made it while he was playing in Washington. And so you tell the whole the Lions have ruined Matt Stafford thing. Kirk Cousins still managed to get to a Pro Bowl playing for them.
I imagine, like, I respect the All-Pro list more than I do the Pro Bowl, yes. But I'm guessing that Matt Stafford got zero All-Pro.
I was about to say, let's go to the videotape. Nope, I don't see that here at all. I see NFL Comeback Player of the Year 2011. Pro Bowl 2014, and the Detroit Lions all-time team.
Oh, congrats. And who do you breed out? Scott yes. Mitchell?
I was actually very curious about that because I would imagine that number one is what, Bobby Lane?
There you go.
They had Bobby Lane, and now there's a gentleman named Dutch Clark who played from 1934 to 1938, whom I believe they just put into the Hall of Fame. We don't make Dutches anymore, by the way. Well, they make Dutches, but people roll them. Got Bobby Lane. We got Matt Stafford. Yeah, that's it. There's nobody on the Lions list between 1950-something and Matthew Stafford.
It's rough. That is rough. That man pulled the big fish, small pond out there to get on their all-time yes. team.
That's all it is. That's all it is. Now, we got one more to get to while we're here. This game does intrigue me. Josh Allen mm-hmm. and the Buffalo Bills against Mac Jones and Bill Belichick. And the New England Patriots. Because the one thing I have to say that, like, you know, I've come around a bit on Allen. He actually got better, but still come around nonetheless, I have. I always figured, well, Bill Belichick just got something for a dude like that. Like, Bill Belichick gonna eat that alive. And it doesn't happen when they play against each other. It doesn't.
I was looking at the last four times that they played, and Josh Allen has one interception and eight touchdowns. And pretty good QBR with the exception of that one weather game. Like, the weather game is the only time they lost. He won all the other games. In that game, I told you after it happened, we can throw that out. That ain't football. That ain't going to happen again, where you can get away with your quarterback throwing three times. So, yeah, Josh Allen versus Bill Belichick. And to kind of oversimplify it, my, like, armchair analysis of that without doing, like, deep film study is that Josh Allen has all the tools. Like, given all the reasons why you shouldn't have drafted Josh Allen, given all his numbers and stuff, he's the guy when you look at him, you're like, man, he can do everything. And if he can ever put this all together, he'd be the best quarterback in football. And occasionally he's able to put it together. I think also part of his problem is he knows that. And so when a play is dead, he's like, no, it ain't. I can make this happen, and then it backfires on him. But I think my armchair analysis is that Belichick, everyone knows the cliche, I'm sure they're tired of hearing it, is Belichick takes away what you do best. Josh Allen does it all, man. Like, you can't stop his run. If you do that, he'll pick you apart if you're weak in the secondary. You can't take away the middle of the field because he has the arm strength to attack deep and attack outside. The only way to, like, have success, in my view, against Josh Allen is Josh Allen messes up or you confuse him. Because if he's able to know the coverage, he has the arrow in the quiver. I don't know if you watch Marvel stuff, but my daughter's into it a lot. I watch it all. And Hawkeye got all these weird arrows that do crazy, unbelievable things. That's Josh Allen. He got them all. But sometimes he pulls out the battering ram arrow when he needs to pull out the keyhole arrow, and that's the problem.
The only way you're getting him, you have to get pressure with four very strong men. We have talked about this before. You can send somebody off the edge to get him, but he better not be wearing no number 27. He better not be wearing no number 31. He need to wear a number 50 or higher. I mean, I guess it ain't really no telling these days. They letting these dudes wear anything. But you need to bring somebody in there with some real strength, because I don't think Josh Allen's been brought down by one man in his life.
It don't look like it. I mean, the man might be able to bring him down. Like, the United States government, the man might be able to bring him down. But a man? it ain't happening. You're going to have to go COINTELPRO if you think that a man is going to bring him down. And this Cam Newton is the early comps. And he is Cam Newton in an NFL that is more prepared to have Cam Newton. And that's what it seems like to me. And he's developed.
No, he's made it happen. And good for him. He seemed like a cool dude, too, right? And he also seemed that he thought his play was more like we thought his play was than the public did when it was not good, right? Like, he's the dude that was like, yo, I gotta do better than this, right? Like, I gotta step this thing here up. Although, and this is the thing for me in this game, no matter how good he gets, me and you got the same thing that we ain't never gonna forget.
That crossbody pass he threw to a square body all the way down the field. I ain't never gonna forget that one, but.
Dog, the end of that game was like, what is going on here? What is there? And then on the other side, like the opposite quarterback completely, basically, Mac Jones, right? And they, man, if the Patriots win this game, man, they're going to make Mac Jones into the Stetson Bennett of the NFL. Like, we're just going too far here, man. He's doing all right. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the dude's playing poorly. He's playing better than any other rookie did this year. But they lied to themselves about what this is with him.
You are right. Mac Jones has been oversold. And the price has been coming up. And they ain't had the money to cover it in recent weeks. And I don't see it happening now. If they ask him to carry this team in some way, if they get down by 14 or something, like, I feel like Belichick's strategy is going to have to be, we have to create turnovers off of Josh Allen. Like, that's it. You got to create a short field. You're going to have to get more possessions than them, and you're going to have to create a short field. So you're going to have to turn over Josh Allen in some way, whether it's fumbles or interceptions. That's the only way to get it done.
Yo, last thing, before I forget, and it kind of ties to Patriots in a way, Judge Joe Brown got fired by the Giants, and, you know, since I'm doing this no Twitter thing, I miss out a lot on, like, the highlights going through the game. Dog, what in the hell was that quarterback sneak stuff they were doing?
So, I come to the belief that he thought that was going to get him kept. Like, that's the only reason why you do that is because you're like, man, I'm going to show them some level of innovation that all the pundits that are killing me are going to celebrate me going forward because nobody else would do this. But the crazy part about running it, those back-to-back quarterback sneaks out of some sort of rugby-style reverse wishbone formation, is I've seen teams when they're on their own one, it's third down, they run a quarterback sneak in order to get more room to punt out of the back of the end zone. But normally, if you're on the 4 or 5, which is where they were, you have enough room to punt. There's no reason to do that. And also, you don't get in a reverse wishbone to telegraph what you're doing. Like, the point is, you want to signal to them that we're doing the same thing we always do. Then my quarterback can get us 2 yards of room before anyone even touches him. And you do it on third down before you're going to punt. So, like, they already had the room they needed, so there's no reason to do that. Then you telegraph it, and then you do it back to back. Like, the defenders had to think, all right, they were setting us up with that last one, and now this one is the fumble rooski trick play. Because you look over at other teams like the Lions, who had nothing to play for, just all trick plays, everything. We gonna win this game. And these boys is essentially kneeling it out, backed up. And his big thing is, we've made progress as far as the culture is concerned. That was his selling point. It's like, yes, it hasn't translated to wins, but this is the culture we're trying to create here. Look. And then you look at that, and that's one of those moments that I do think impacts culture, and it doesn't impact it in a good way. You are telling your team, nah, we don't care about this. Let's just give up. It's terrible.
Yo, man, and that dude, I mean, he talked all that noise. Like, I'm not as down on him as Ryan Clark was. I said from the very beginning about Joe Judge, though. I was like, this approach isn't going to work. But apparently, from what I've been reading, his relationships with his players were fine. Like, he did okay in that way, which I didn't think was necessarily going to be the thing that worked for him. But he went out there and embarrassed himself in that last game. And what I don't think helped anybody, like a guy in his position, or even a dude like Urban Meyer. You mentioned it briefly there. I think Dan Campbell kind of showed up a lot of these people coaching these terrible teams, because that team was looking like it might go winless, and they played hard all the way to the end.
That's culture. And I do think that there's something to be said for being who you are. And I'm not in the locker room, but what you're telling me suggests that maybe Judge Joe is different in the locker room than he is at the press conference. Dan Campbell did all that biting kneecap foolishness, but Dan Campbell was authentic. He went in the locker room and I suspect started talking that biting kneecap foolishness, and he was all in though. Like, he was committed, and people bought into that. My guess is Judge Joe is out there like that homeboy you got who like, yeah, I run my house. You know, it ain't no big deal. I do what I want. And then he get home and be like, Hey, baby, me and the guys was talking, and I was just hoping that, I'm going to take care of everything I need to. I'm going to do the dishes, but I was hoping I could go grab a drink with my friend. It's his birthday. Like, you got to give a reason to go out. That's what it feels like, and that inauthenticity, like, is weird, because you can't go out there and be like, I'm the man, we tough, we the toughest, we building culture, we ain't scared, we want people who want to come here, blah, blah, blah. Let's kneel it out on second and third down. Like, those things don't mesh.
The Giants turned into the Jets when we weren't looking, except the Jets are still the Jets. Like, that's the only reason that the Giants have not fully turned into
the Jets.
At least
the Jets playing hard towards the end of the year. The Jets giving Tampa a game.
That's true.
And who else did they play? They gave somebody else a game that was good. So, like, I'd rather be the Jets right now than the Giants.
Hey, man. But look, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on Undefeated. Check him out all over the place. And check him out Friday, January 21st, 10 o'clock, on Back on the Record with Bob Costas on HBO. You can see him chop it up with me and the homie Howard Bryant. We will be the panel on the show next Friday. I want to make sure I get this in, because if you get it on the next Foxworth Friday, you might know about it too late and you can't make plans. So next Friday, get ready. Basically, I hadn't thought about this. It's like the right time is showing up on HBO.
I'm going to have to come with the jokes, because y'all going to have all the history and brain power that we need. I don't know. I'm going to have to fill some other, set some picks, box out. I'm not going to be the scorer.
Hey, yo, I'm totally looking forward to it. So that'll be dope. I appreciate you, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.